Welcome to Elite Achievement, a podcast for financial advisors and leaders in financial services who are building and scaling firms. I'm Kristen Burke. Let's start here. Every leader shapes the culture of their organization through the standards they set, the behaviors they model, and what they're willing to tolerate. Dustin Corrente has spent more than 25 years in financial services, and during his leadership at the Mid-Atlantic Financial Group, the organization grew to more than 150 advisors while increasing revenue by more than 400%. Dustin, I'm looking forward to today's conversation. I know you've spent more than 25 years in financial services. Tell us a little bit about your leadership journey.
Yeah, Kristen, first of all, thanks for having me on today. This is a great opportunity. My leadership journey is interesting. I actually grew up in a family business. So from a very young age, I grew up in that business, and it was a retail sales business that my family had. And so I've always been around sales and business, and leadership was kind of always a part of that, along with, you know, my upbringing. I played multiple sports growing up, and played varsity sports in high school, and went on to play D1 sports in college. So it's always been a part of my, you know, my life. And I realized very early on, especially because one of the sports that, you know, I excelled in was more of an individual sport. I learned a lot of lessons from that in terms of the importance of not only being able to lead other people, but leading yourself. And that was, you know, I learned a lot of lessons from that, but I also learned that and very quickly learned that there's a bigger impact, at least for me, that came from being around other people and helping other people succeed. And that was always something that I was really passionate about. So when I eventually shifted into the business, and I started in this business at a very young age, only 21 years old, right out of college, I realized very early on that while I really enjoyed working with clients and kind of the art of the close and acquiring a new client and bringing them on, and ultimately the income, that opportunity that came from that. After I got through a couple of years, it became very clear to me that I enjoyed, you know, something kind of beyond that, which was leading a team of people or a larger organization versus just doing it myself. And so that, you know, fast forward 25 years, and that's kind of what has brought us to today.
I'm curious. Let's go back to some of those lessons you learned in sports. You mentioned that you had to excel in an individual sport, and you learned a lot of lessons around leading yourself. What are a couple of those lessons that stand out that you still use today as a leader?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I guess I've kind of always been this way. I'm more of a perfectionist. So, that can be a good and a bad thing, right? So and the sport I was referring to before was golf. It's interesting. For anybody that, you know, plays golf or understands golf, you understand that no matter what you do, and no matter how hard you work or how much you practice, you will never, ever master golf. You can get better. You can improve in certain areas, but golf is not. There was actually a book written, I believe, called, you know, Golf is Not a Game of Perfect. And so that, you know, that was a lesson that I had to, you know, I had to almost teach myself early on or understand. And I was lucky that I had some very good coaches and mentors that at a younger age that were around me. And, you know, they kind of saw that I was being very hard on myself. And you know, they said, look, you know, this is never going to be perfect, and you have to stop being so hard on yourself. And, you know, those lessons translate to business, right? Whether you're running the business by yourself, you know, or you're leading a team of people, you know, those lessons still apply.
Golf is a very humbling sport. I picked it up during COVID, and I'm a fun golfer. Let's just say that. So sometimes I have some really great shots. Most times I have really terrible shots, but you know, that's golf. And recently I was so frustrated, and my husband looked at me and he goes, "Babe, you don't practice. You don't play every day." He's like, "Why are you expecting yourself to be so good?" And well, I think, you know, that's what a perfectionist does, right? We just expect we're going to be fantastic. And when he just kind of reminded me that, you know, I'm not out there doing all of these things every day to be perfect, just go out and have fun, the game became so much more fun for me. And I actually shot better when I think I started caring a little bit less.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. And I, you know, that's kind of, it's probably my biggest gap that I have, along with probably some issues with patience. But I, you know, it applies to everything. You know, I also am a hockey player. And, you know, I at this point in my life, I still play, but I only play once a week. And, you know, I see a lot of the same things happening where, you know, I'll do something in a game or something will happen. And, you know, I'm expecting that that performance would be something like what would have happened, you know, 25 years ago or 30 years ago. And I have to remind myself, hey, you know, you only play once a week. You know, you're nowhere near at the same level you were 30 years ago. And so, you know, all of those things are relevant.
And I think all of those things are relevant to advisors that are building businesses and firms, because I think there's a lot of times where, you know, advisors are expecting better outcomes, but they might not always be putting in the effort to get those outcomes.
Agree. You know, I think when you look at, you know, and I went through very early on in my career, a lot of leadership training, which, you know, to kind of answer your original question, that I was very intrigued, very interested in all of that. And just, I had some very good people that were around me and some of the best mentors and minds in the business at the time. And so they got me really excited about leadership. But one of the things I learned very early on was, you know, an alignment model. And sometimes, as we're looking at things, there's your ideal self, right? And then what's actually occurring. And sometimes those two things aren't in alignment. And we see a lot of times with, whether it's business leaders or advisors, they may think that, or they may have an ideal concept of themselves, but they're not actually, the reality is they're not actually doing what they need to do, or they haven't made the commitment that they need to make in order to achieve that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's, you know, so true, that figuring out what commitment to make. And I think sometimes we want, or we say we want something, but our actions aren't backing it up. And it just kind of proves we're not truly committed to what it is that we say that we're wanting. Well, as you look across the industry, Dustin, where do you think your approach to leadership differs from other leaders in financial services?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. Obviously, there's a lot of people that I know and that I've met over the years. And there's also a lot of people I don't know and haven't met. So it's all I can kind of speak to around that is my experience with all of the individuals that I've come across and what I've observed. You know, the biggest thing for me personally, and kind of how I view, you know, leadership and what I think is really important. Number one is authenticity. I've always been, again, I'm 25 years in doing this, and something that stuck with me very early on. And, you know, I don't know if this is just from my business upbringing, you know, or what it was, but I realized very quickly, I identified, hey, like, who are the people that are really, really good leaders, and they're impacting the business and they're getting, you know, great results, and people, you know, they have good relationships with people. And what I kept coming back to is they were authentic. They were real people. And I've come across, unfortunately, Kristen, so many bad leaders over the years, and the common theme, besides some of the things maybe around organizational, you know, skills and ability to, you know, understand situational leadership and that model. But what I always keep coming back to is there's a lot of people out there that, unfortunately, the authenticity isn't there, and they're in it for the wrong reason. And they don't necessarily have the best interests of others. They may say that, they may present that way. But the reality is that that's not actually what's happening. And, you know, I've seen a lot of that, over the years. So I would say that that's something that for me has always been very important. I'm not perfect. I made a lot of mistakes, over my career. Especially early on, because I got into leadership very young. But the thing I've always prided myself on is I do what I say I'm going to do. And when someone asks me for help or they need something, if I make a commitment to somebody, I will always follow through, and I will run through a brick wall for them in order to fulfill my commitment. And that's something that's really important. Another factor in that, in terms of how I would kind of view myself different than some of the other leaders that I've worked with, is I hold myself to a very high standard, and that's a double-edged sword, right? That can be good and bad. But I think it's helped me over my career achieve a lot and do very well. And so I expect a lot from others, but I never expect a lot without being willing to do the work myself and demonstrate those capabilities and those competencies myself. And I think that's really important. And I truly believe that people will typically rise to the challenge, and they will typically rise to the level or the standard that you set for them. And if they don't even hit that, they at least come very close. And what I've seen over the years is there's a lot of leaders in any business, not just ours, that they just set the bar too low. And when you set the bar at whatever level it is, your people are typically going to hit, you know, somewhere around 80% of that is typically what we see always happen. So if the bar is set much lower, those are the results that you're going to get. And so I've always, you know, prided myself on, you know, setting the bar very high, you know, expecting a lot, not only of myself, but of other people's, but doing everything in my power to help them believe that more is possible.
Why do you think leaders set the bar too low?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, that's probably more of a psychological thing. That would be my guess. I think that probably confidence of the leader comes into play with a lot of that. Perhaps their level of experience or competency in what they're doing. Sometimes we have situations where leaders have never actually done what they're leading in terms of the business. And I think we run into trouble a lot sometimes with that. I've seen it a lot in my business over the years. And I think when you have a leader that is trying to lead a business and they've never actually done any aspect of it themselves, I think automatically you're at a disadvantage. And I see a lot of those leaders setting the bar much lower because they just don't, either they don't believe it or they don't know. So I think a lot of that comes into play. And sometimes there's imposter syndrome, you know, that also can come into play as well, and why people do that.
That's an interesting point you made around when leaders have never done what they're leading in the business, it might lead them to set the bar too low. And I think one of the things I've seen in my career in financial services is that a lot of people would believe in order to be a leader of a firm, you have to be a great advisor and you hit certain production benchmarks and then you can be a leader. But I think what we've started to experience is some of the best advisors are not great leaders. And some of the best leaders have actually never been advisors. So how do you think we can navigate that situation?
Yeah, all I can tell you, Kristen, is from my experience, I have not come across personally very many great leaders in our industry that at some point in their career were not an advisor. I have not seen, I might be able to count on one hand, and I've been at two major companies and I've been around a lot of people. So I'm not saying, I don't want to give the impression that that's totally impossible. Certainly people can do it. That's not the norm. But I do agree 100% with you that just because someone was a great advisor or they're a great producer or they built a great business, that's going to translate automatically to being a great leader. And we see that in sports all the time, right? That's why, you know, Michael Jordan was, you know, never a head coach. And you could go through all the sports and, you know, in most cases, the best players and the all-stars typically are not, you know, they don't end up being coaches. It's a completely different, in many cases, a different skill set that they have to have.
What do you think are some of the skill sets you have to build in order to be a great coach or a great leader in financial services?
I think you have to, number one, believe in what you're doing. Unfortunately, and again, this isn't just our business, it's all businesses. You do have leaders that sometimes get into it for the wrong reasons. And that could be, you know, it could be for a lot of different things, whether it's more compensation driven or they're chasing a title, or, you know, they don't have any other option or whatever it is. But I think you have to believe in what you're doing. And I think for me, especially that was always a, you know, my true north was, I loved leadership. I loved helping other people and building a business. And I always found more joy out of helping people achieve what they weren't able to accomplish on their own. And, you know, that starts with a belief in what you're doing and the business model. So for instance, in our organization, our entire business model is built on a foundation of financial planning. And when I got here 14 years ago, it was very much a transactional model. And a lot of firms operate like that, especially back then. And, you know, I came in and I didn't make changes right away because I spent time building relationships and meeting the people and understanding all the different aspects. But I realized very quickly, you know, hey, sure, can we make a lot of money and can you sell a bunch of stuff to clients? But is that really what we're trying to accomplish long term? And the answer to that was no. So, you know, we completely tore down the entire process and model and rebuilt it. And, you know, and again, that starts with what I said before, which is believing in what you're doing. And it has to start there. And you have to have a culture that's built around that belief and that foundation.
What role do you think innovation played in the growth of the firm?
I think innovation is huge in any, especially in our industry. Any leader in most cases can go into a role, especially because our industry is so heavily driven by recruiting that and this could be a wirehouse, it could be an insurance broker dealer, it could be an independent model, it could be a regional, you know, type model. It really doesn't matter. That the industry has always been driven by, you know, recruiting is a big focus. So any leader can go in, right? And if they're focused on recruiting, you can kind of get by. And you can, and if you have decent relationships with the people, you can get by. But if you want to take the business to the next level, you have to bring more to the table than that. And that's always been I'm not the smartest person in the room. I never have been, you know, even in high school and college, you know, academics, I was never the smartest person, but I've always tried to outwork those around me who I felt might have been smarter than me. And part of that was thinking outside the box and pushing the envelope and being innovative in different things that we were trying to do. So I've tried to instill that in my leadership team over the years. And there's been a number of things that, you know, we've done here that I think are a little bit different than what you see at other organizations. And you know, even in the model that I'm in right now, if you were to go to one of the firms in a different part of the country, you know, there may be more of a cookie cutter approach in certain instances, but we haven't ever operated like that. And we're constantly thinking of new ways to innovate, grow the business, create efficiencies, and do things differently to create growth in the organization.
Yeah. What are some ways that you instilled this concept of innovation into your leadership team?
Yeah, I think not accepting the status quo. So a lot of times, and I've seen this because I've sat in these meetings before, especially being in corporate America for so long, a lot of times conversations will be more surface level. It'll be more cookie cutter, check the box type of things. I've never operated that way, and I've never thought that way. First of all, if I ever hold a meeting, there's always a purpose for the meeting, and there's always something we are going to accomplish. I'm not in the business of sitting in a room with a bunch of smart people for hours on end to then walk out and not actually move the ball forward. And unfortunately, you know, and it's not just in our industry, it's in a lot of businesses. That's what happens in a lot of leadership meetings. And so, you know, I have always challenged the team that whenever I see us kind of fading back into just maybe there's a generic response that comes my way, or we're talking about how we can achieve, you know, a different goal that we're working towards, you know, I'm always challenging them to think differently and what can we create that maybe other people aren't doing, and think differently about it to achieve that. And sometimes people are just programmed to not do that, right? They're programmed to just kind of work within a model. And so, you know, I think my role has always, the way I view my role is to help people get outside that box and think differently and realize you can do a lot more than you think you can do sometimes. And I think that's helped us achieve the success that we've had in the organization.
As you're talking about thinking differently and innovation, it brings me back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago earlier in our conversation around how most leaders in financial services have been advisors. Or I think you mentioned most of the leaders that you've seen that have been good leaders, they've been advisors. How do you think we might need to think differently? Is it possible for someone who hasn't been an advisor to be a really good leader of an organization?
I do think it's possible. My thought around that is that you're going to have a group of people that you're going to have to earn the respect. Because in our business, especially if people have been around a little while, if a leader comes in, anybody that's has some tenure and has been around a while and they're doing their thing and they're running their business, I mean, they're going to know very quickly and understand the resume of the person that's coming in. And you have to earn that credibility. And I think someone who maybe hasn't been an advisor, if they're coming into that leadership role, they have to spend time understanding the craft. And my advice to anybody that's doing that is you got to get in the trenches a little bit. And what does that look like? It could look like going to some industry conferences and spending time around advisors that have built great businesses. It could be going through, you know, some of the higher end certifications to gain some of the competency. Like the CFP and some of the other designations out there, if they don't have that. Now, do I think the CFP is necessary to be a great leader? No, I do not. I don't have a CFP. I'm 25 years in doing this, but if they were never an advisor, that is something that could help a lot. Also even sitting in client meetings, because I find it very hard to understand or believe that a leader could truly be effective working with advisors and coaching them if they've never sat in their shoes and they don't understand the day-to-day challenges that advisors go through and some of the things that they need to do in order to build their business or provide better client service or to change the direction of how they're running their service model or whatever it is. So all of these things I'm mentioning, I think are things leaders could do if they'd never been an advisor and they were moving into that type of role.
And I think some of those ideas you shared, Dustin, they're applicable even to advisors who are moving into a leadership role. I think those are all really great ways to continue to skill up and become a better leader.
Absolutely.
As we think about leadership development, what role do you think that's played in the growth of your organization?
I think it's been huge. I think one of the biggest things I've done, and again, I don't have it all figured out, and I've certainly made a lot of mistakes along the way, but from day one, I instilled a culture of not only high performance, and you know, we operate at a very high standard here in the organization, but I've instilled a culture around leadership development, and that starts with me. Down through the leadership team. But, you know, we took it one step further with that. And this is where I don't see a lot of organizations in the industry spending enough time with the advisors around leadership development. And the reason I believe that's so important is because whether anybody goes into a formal leadership role or not, Kristen, they have to have a basic skill set if they want to move their business past a certain level. Because anybody can get to the point where they do, you know, a couple hundred thousand in production or revenue, you know, maybe even as much as 300,000 or 400,000, they can get up there. But eventually they're going to plateau if they don't build that skill set. Because, the leadership side of it is so critical. Not only do you have to lead yourself, like we talked about before, but you have hopefully staff people or assistants that are working for you. The leadership skill set's going to be critical there. You have clients, it's super critical with clients. And unfortunately, I believe a lot of advisors miss the boat early on in their career because they don't have enough of that leadership competency built in. So something as simple as flexing their style when working with clients or helping the clients get to a decision that maybe initially they don't think is the best or they don't want to make, but helping them arrive at that, you know, that's where a lot of these skill sets come into play. And also working with spouses, you know, a husband and wife, and the dynamic there, or when children come involved into the conversation, the skill set is so critical. And so, you know, back to what I was saying, I instilled that from day one in the organization, and we have invested an incredible amount of time into a leadership development model. We've done numerous leadership series with our advisors. And also invested in outside coaches with certain individuals. And then in some of the bigger events that we do, there's always a leadership component that's tied in.
Yeah, I think you make such a great point. So often we focus on developing the formal leaders, or we almost wait until people express interest in leadership, or they hit that certain production benchmark, or they've got a vision to be a leader. But what changes and what happens when we start talking about leadership and focusing on leadership right at the beginning? It's a game changer, because you're right, every advisor is a leader, even if they're not in a formal leadership role.
Absolutely.
How do you identify the future, and we'll call it formal leaders now, not to be confusing to our audience, but how do you identify future formal leaders in the organization?
Yeah, over the years, I think from the moment they come into the organization, I've always kind of felt you have a pretty good sense for people. You know, I get a pretty good read on people pretty quickly as you get to know them and understand how they think. And some of the things that come to mind for me is I look at the background a lot, and I'm not saying this has to be the case with everybody, because certainly it doesn't. A lot of times, you know, if someone has played sports, you know, at a high level, that's, you know, that typically is a really good sign. If they're a career changer and they have leadership experience in their background, that's like an automatic, you know, someone we're going to look at and maybe invest some time into. You know, I also look at people that, you know, really enjoy working with other people and helping other people and are good at coaching. And so we observe that, you know, when people come into the organization, we observe those characteristics and then we kind of fold them in. So one of the things we've done over the years is we do leadership strategy sessions and even like a leadership retreat where we'll invite a handful of advisors that are in that category I was just explaining into these sessions or into a retreat where we're offsite for a few days and expose them to, you know, the bigger picture and, you know, what we're focused on as an organization and the development that goes along with it. And we see very quickly, I mean, people either latch on to that and then we know right away, like, hey, these people are high potential, or, you know, maybe it's not their jam, right? And they, you know, they're just going to be better as advisors and they can be coaches or, you know, something to that effect, but not in a formal leadership role.
Yeah. So would you say that exposure to leadership can help start building that vision for future leaders?
Absolutely. It's critical. And I think, you know, every single organization always has to be allocating a specific amount of time to the next generation of leaders, because you never know what is going to happen. You know, I had, you know, again, I'm 45, I'll be 46 in 8 days here. And I've been around for 25 years. But I'm not that old, but I've been around a while and I've just seen a lot of stuff happen, whether that's family situations or relocations, or, you know, people just have a change of heart in terms of their career path. And then the worst case scenario is, you know, is death. I had one of my best friends in the organization here pass away at the age of 43, 3 years ago. And, you know, you go through things like that and you see how quickly things can change. And while, you know, we're still grieving that loss today, but the business goes on and life goes on, and we have to be able to account for these life events happening. And if you're not constantly cultivating the relationships in the organization and investing into the people so that there's a bench of potential leaders, you're going to be left holding the bag, and then you're going to be forced to make a decision that you don't want to make or you have to rush into versus having the best possible person ready to go.
Well, and I think that that's something that all of our listeners can take with them and think about, you know, who are those relationships they need to be investing in and thinking about how they start to cultivate that future group of leaders. Dustin, as we wrap up our conversation today, what advice do you have for a leader of a firm?
Kristen, great question. I think it goes back to a few of the things we were talking about before. And the number one thing that I focus on that I think by far matters more than anything else is culture. And I don't know if it was Peter Drucker or I know Reed Hastings has been quoted saying this in his book, No Rules, Rules. But you know, they talk about how culture eats strategy for breakfast every day. And that's so true when you think about it. And I've spent a lot of time over my career on the culture piece. And when you think about culture, it's what you tolerate. It's what you celebrate. It's what you repeatedly communicate. And even when you think about our organization, we have a mantra in our firm now that was created years ago, and it has three components to it, and it's all encompassing. So everything we do, each of these three things can relate to really anything an advisor or a leader is doing, and even outside of that in their personal life. And, you know, the mantra in our organization revolves around three things. Number one is extreme ownership. And, you know, most of the people listening, I'm sure, are familiar with Jocko Willink. And, you know, he wrote the book along with his partner many years ago, Extreme Ownership. But we firmly believe, and we live that as leaders, the best leaders have the most ownership, you know, in everything that they do. So that's the first part, is extreme ownership. The second part is making a commitment to get 1% better every single day. And again, you can relate that to your business. You can relate it to your personal life. I know a lot of people focus on their health and fitness, very applicable there. You know, you can relate it to your marriage with your kids, but that commitment to getting 1% better every day, which I also believe is referenced in Atomic Habits, is so important. And if you just focus on that and it's top of mind and you're intentional about it, it can make such a huge difference. So again, extreme ownership, a commitment to 1% better every day. And then the third part of our mantra is letting go of self-limiting beliefs. And I think I referenced this early on in the conversation about how I think sometimes people set the bar too low. And I've seen over my career, whether it's advisors or leaders, they create these limiting beliefs in their head, and it really can slow them down and kind of cap out their potential. And you know, if you believe you can do something, the odds are you can probably get it done and you can probably achieve it. But you can definitely be sure if you don't believe it, it's not going to happen. And so, you know, when we think about extreme ownership and 1% better every day and letting go of self-limiting beliefs, everything we do in our organization is centered around that. And everything we communicate is always built around those three parts of our mantra. And so that's why I believe the culture piece is so important. And culture is also something you cannot delegate. So for all the leaders out there listening, you have to own it and you have to live it. And it has to be a big part of your focus on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. I think that's such an important note for us to end on, because as leaders, we're always looking for what we can delegate and how to be more efficient with our time and where we should spend our time. And it sounds like culture is one of those pieces that needs you and needs your thinking and needs your own belief and buy-in in order for it to be the culture you want.
Absolutely.
Dustin, thank you for the conversation today. If people want to learn more about you, where can they find you?
Kristen, best way is probably just to hop on LinkedIn. And you know, you can check out my profile there, and there's a lot of information available there.
Yeah, LinkedIn is such a great way to connect. And to those of you listening, what are you taking away from today's conversation? I appreciate you listening and investing the time to grow as a leader. Follow Elite Achievement for more conversations on leadership and building a firm.